who is leaving? That's probably the most worrying aspect of all of this. The people who are leaving are the most productive, what I call the seed corn of California. People who are going into family formation stage, 30 to 50 year old people who are mid-career, people who make $200,000 a year and above. And so what we're left with, which is kind of ironic, is an aging, graying generation that need more services in the form of personal services and healthcare services, and the low-income people that service them.
My guest today is Marshall Toplansky, innovation professor at Chapman University, who's been studying California's exodus. Today, he'll share with us his findings from researching the demographics of the people that are leaving California and how this population decline is going to impact us Californians, our innovation culture, and future prosperity.
What it comes down to, we've done surveys with CEOs in advanced industries, we've looked at the data, we've done huge correlation analyses of, you know, what factors correlate with what other factors. Oddly enough, it comes down to two things.
I'm Siamak Karami. Welcome to California Insider. Marshall, it's great to have you on. Welcome.
Oh, Siamak, it's so great to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah, we're very excited to talk to you about a phenomenon that's been we've been following on California Insider is the exodus. You guys at the Chapman University, you and your partner, Joel Kotkin, who we had him in the beginning of the show a couple of times, and you guys have been studying this exodus like in depth, and you've been kind of ahead of this trend as it's been ignored for whatever reason from the media and a lot of different institutions. Can you tell us what's happening with this exodus?
It does seem as though there's a bit of denial going on as far as the numbers go. This is a very interesting time for California. We're losing population. It is to the tune of about 1 million people over the course of the last decade, and it's accelerating. The problem with this particular exodus is who is leaving. That's probably the most worrying aspect of all of this. The people who are leaving are the most productive, what I call the seed corn of California. People who are going into family formation stage, the 30 to 50 year old people who are mid-career, people who would normally be buying the houses that you would step up in value for to keep the residential real estate market going, but people who are going to be building businesses, people who are going to become senior executives, people who are going to become senior professionals that earn a good deal of money, these are the people that are leaving, and it's very, very worrying. And they are leaving in lockstep with businesses that are leaving. And so that's a very troubling sign for the future of the state.
And you mentioned this is accelerating. Can you explain what does that mean?
The number of people who are leaving, especially coastal California, is going up every year based on what the census and the IRS data is telling us. They're moving from places like Los Angeles and Orange County and the Bay Area. They're moving to places like Dallas and Houston. The big increases we've been seeing are in Midwestern and slightly smaller cities. So, for instance, Louisville is doing fantastically. Kansas City is doing fantastically. Nashville is doing quite well. North Carolina is doing quite well. And the reason for that, very plainly, is the tax environment and the cost of housing. So if you are a 29-year-old that just got married and you're thinking, okay, I'm going to start a family, which, by the way, demographically is a big chunk because this is what's known as the baby boom echo era, right? The kids of my age group, because I'm a baby boomer, they're looking to start families and grow. They can't afford to live here. And so most of them are reasonably well-educated. They've started on their careers. They're starting to gain traction in their careers, and they want to start a family. And what do? You buy a house. Not if you're living in coastal California, you're not, because the cost of it is too high. And today, with the interest rates that have just been jacked up over the course of the last year because of market forces, you're even less likely to be able to do it. So that's what's causing this acceleration, the idea that now people need to put down roots and they can't afford to be here.
And these are the people that, from what you're explaining, these are the people that are doing well, like
yes.
the young people that are, they have a good job probably, and they have a good career, and they started a good career, and these are not the people that are not trying. These are the people
correct.
That are actually
correct.
Trying.
Correct, we're not losing people so much on the low end of the income stream. In fact, interestingly, most of the jobs that have been created in California over the past two decades are relatively low-income service worker jobs. That's where the largest number increase in employment has come. The other thing that's happened in California is we're aging. If you look at the population base in California, the percentage of people who are seniors is increasing quite a bit. And so what we're left with, which is kind of ironic, is an aging, graying generation that need more services in the form of personal services and healthcare services, and the low-income people that service them. And what we're missing is this productive core group of people that would normally, in the history of California, were contributing by becoming managers of businesses, by becoming professionals like lawyers and accountants and people like that that are part of the businesses. They're moving out because the businesses are moving out. That's the other untold story in California's exodus, is not just the exodus of people, but the exodus of the companies that provide the opportunity for people.
And how big is that exodus of businesses?
It's large if you dimensionalize it in two ways. One is we track the number of corporate headquarters that are leaving California. When a corporate headquarters moves from California to another state, who moves along with it? An entire panoply of professionals, lawyers, accountants, analysts, middle and upper management. So we've lost about, over the past 2 years, we're about in the range of 500 total corporate headquarters, of larger corporate headquarters, that have left the state. So that's the first way we dimensionalize it. The second way actually has even more economic impact on the state in a broader sense, and that is, where does a company choose to invest to grow? Where do they put capital projects that are going to create a new factory, a new office, a new distribution center, a new something that requires capital? Where are they going to put that? California used to be a magnet for those kinds of projects because companies would look at California as a really growing area and say, wow, you know, in order to take advantage of the economic growth in California, we need to do capital projects in California. We are being outpaced by Texas, Ohio. If you think about all of this conversation that's going on around reshoring and bringing manufacturing back to the United States, it is not happening in California. California does not want manufacturing facilities because it's environmentally unacceptable to have a manufacturing plant in California. At least that's what the policymakers are saying. So all of these capital projects, which employ architects, contractors, people who are in the building trades, all of these things are going elsewhere. And these are also people that are making good livings, above average wages, and guess what? They're not here. They're in Columbus, Ohio. They're in Nashville. They're in other places that, by comparison to us, are boom towns. So what's left? What's left? So we have, we're okay in the tech industry, although the data is showing that companies that are very R&D centric are tending to want to site elsewhere. So we track, we have an index that we created at Chapman called the Index of Advanced Industries. So we took a definition of advanced industries that the Brookings Institution created. These are companies across not just software and hardware, but other industries where there's a lot of R&D that comprises their business. And we tracked over, since 2005, where those companies and those employees are, how much wages they are being paid to people in those industries, and rank them and see where we are. So for instance, we're in Orange County today. We just finished the latest data that's available. In 2005, Orange County was the 10th largest advanced industry hub in the United States. We're now the 16th. Places like, in the last couple of years, places like Kansas City, Nashville, Atlanta, Tampa, Florida, are growing much more rapidly than we are. So that when you think of California, you think of, this is an advanced place. You know, this is an advanced economy. We're not known for kind of the same things that Flint, Michigan or Detroit are known for. We're known for moving the ball forward on technology. Well, while we're still known for it, we're being eclipsed by other people and other areas that are growing faster. So question is, why?
Why is this happening?
Why is it happening? This is a huge area of study for us at Chapman. And what it comes down to, we've done surveys with CEOs in advanced industries. We've looked at the data. We've done huge correlation analyses of, you know, what factors correlate with what other factors. Oddly enough, it comes down to two things. It comes down to, this is from the company level as opposed to the person
and
level.
The idea is the reason why they are not investing here more,
is
right?
The reason they're not investing here is the regulatory environment makes it so hard to be able to actually do any kind of project that requires an investment. Mostly the environmental regulations, CEQA compliance, and even more than the regulation itself, the implementation of the regulations. So, for instance, in CEQA, you can have round after round of challenges, even after you've created an environmental plan, study plan, the plan is approved, somebody can say, well, I don't like this particular aspect of it, and challenge it over and over and over again. So as a result, projects don't get built. On the housing side, which is an interesting element, because one of the questions is, why are the housing prices so high? What this results in is large housing projects just don't get built. If you look at some of the projects in northern LA County, for instance, they've gone with round after round has resulted in 30 years worth of projects being deferred. So that's why we don't have a lot of supply. So regulation is one issue that is a factor. And the other is the tax environment is very difficult in California. We have the highest taxes of any place in the country. So between taxes and the number of regulations, and by the way, the last data that I saw from Mercatus Institute, which tracks this kind of thing, shows that we have about 430,000 regulations on the books affecting business.
430,000.
The next lowest, the next highest one is 200,000 something.
Wow.
So we're talking about a seriously out of kilter regulatory environment, which just, if you're a business person, you're going to say, okay, if the market here is so big that this is going to give me, you know, a big advantage to be here, well, maybe I'll put up with that regulation. But if other places are growing faster, why would I want to do that? Let's just move. And the compounding factor is the employees of those companies who are going up in status and income within their companies are saying, you know, I really would like to buy a house. So couldn't we move the company to some place that I can afford to live in? So all of that comes together as kind of the opposite of a virtuous circle, a deteriorating circle that I think is going to, we're starting to see now, is affecting the state, and I think it is just accelerating, and we're going to see it affect us even more in a negative way.
So it's gotten to a point where the businesses now, before people always appreciate California's market. It's
right.
A huge market. And then it's gotten to a point where businesses are saying, okay, it's not worth it anymore from what it's the regulatory and what you put up with.
Right.
What about taxes? People talk about taxes and impacting the business. What is the tax environment in California? How much is it higher than other places for businesses?
Right. So first of all, let's take a quick big picture look at California taxes so that people understand where the taxes are coming from. This state is a little unusual because two-thirds of all of the income, all of the taxes that come into the state coffers come from personal income tax. Some of it comes from business income taxes, and some of it comes from other kind of use fees and property taxes. But when we passed Proposition 13 back in the 80s, we actually improved the tax environment for homeowners because the if you go anywhere else in the country, your property taxes are much higher. So we're much more reliant on the income tax environment. So you could say, well, that's great from a homeownership point of view, right? Your taxes are a little lower than someplace else, which is true. But of course, the price of the housing has now increased to reflect that, so it's kind of neutralized itself. The income tax issue is really an important one to understand because, like most states, we have a progressive income tax structure, which means the more you make, the more you pay from a percentage point of view. The problem that we have here is our overall cost of living, before you even think about taxes, our overall cost of living is higher, and wages are higher to reflect that higher cost of living. But when you look at the rates that you pay in income tax, that sliding parabolic curve, you get up to the maximum rate at a very low wage relative to what's out there. So if you look at the median income for the United States, it's significantly lower than the median income in California. But when you get to the median income in California, you're already paying more than the median tax rate. So it chases people away. So if you're making $120,000 a year as an individual, or let's say $180,000 a year as a couple filing jointly, you're getting up to close to the maximum rate. Now, there is a kicker if you're a billionaire and if you're, you know, super, super wealthy. California has a little extra kicker for you. But for most people, they're getting up to that second highest rate very quickly. Not the case in other states. The level of tax that you have in the level of progressivity in the tax rates is different in other states, so you don't pay as much, even when you have income tax. So that's another thing that just sours people on California, and people cite in all of our research as reasons they want to look elsewhere because they feel like, in addition to it costing me more here, I get taxed more.
Folks, you've probably been hearing me talk about Verify for a while now. Verify has been getting a ton of phone calls from you, and I thank you for supporting an investment that actually helps people. A lot of people are talking about this investment, and I'd like to review the basics with you. First off, yes, it's true. You can earn up to 10.25% fixed rate of return that's not correlated to the stock market or to the Fed. You can turn your income on or off, compounded, whatever you choose, and there are absolutely no fees. There are no restrictions on your principal if you ever need your money back, and you'll get your monthly statement with no surprises. If you are not sure if you can trust this economy, this secure collateralized portfolio may be a very good option for you. Just go to investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then refi.com. Folks, I take my endorsements very seriously. If you're looking for a solid investment that helps people, contact my friends at YRefi and then tell them Siamak Karami sent you. Now let's go back to the interview. Now, Marshall, are you worried about this trend? Because you said it's going to accelerate. And what does California look like in your projection, your thoughts with your team there?
I do feel it's going to accelerate. And I think one of the main things that is accelerating it is this revolution that we have experienced in the past 3 years, which is called remote work. So the idea that professionals can work from anywhere, even if it's not 100%, even if it's 80% or 50% of, means that people have choices about where they live, and they're choosing not to be here. I don't see remote work going away. I see a lot of executives exhibiting wishful thinking that it would go away and saying things like, oh, I'm going to bring people back into my office 3 days a week. Well, guess what? Until people start saying, no, we're not going to do that. So I don't think that remote work is trends are going to be suddenly reversed. And I think that's going to be continuing to cause the problem in addition to the accelerating costs. So interesting question that we're going to have to deal with this year is this $79 billion deficit that the state has. And I don't know how they're going to fix that. If you look at the state's ability to weather a storm like that, we had a rainy day fund, and then we had other funds that were reserve funds that the state had put away. All of those together come out to about $35 to $38 billion. So we still have a $40 billion gap. The state is constitutionally required to balance the budget. Where's that going to come from? Borrowing. So now we're going to have to borrow $40 billion, basically. At what interest rate? Interest rates have gone up. California's balance sheet, it looks a lot iffier than it did before, so that we'll probably not get the lowest rate in the marketplace. And so where do those that additional interest costs go? Well, it's going to be a burden on the state. They're going to probably have to cut services. Historically, the state, when they're stuck in a situation like this, typically cancels capital projects. Well, guess what? That's people not working on projects. So that accelerates their need to go find work someplace else. Or they cut education. And so we already have a huge problem with the quality of public school education in the state. Now, if we fund it even less, something tells me that's not going to go in the right direction. So these are some really big worry beads that the state has that I'm concerned about.
Now, Marshall, some people say that let them leave, that's okay. We have too many people, there's a lot of traffic. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, negative growth is rarely good. You could look at it and say, well, it'd be nice to be able to go drive the 405 freeway without traffic. Of course, it'd be a nice thing. But how do we fund the people that are left? So great, you know, you live in Newport Beach and you have a $10 million house, and you know you're making a ton of money. That's great. What about the person that's going to push your wheelchair? What about the person that's going to do your physical therapy that has to drive in from Anza twice a week in order to be able to afford to actually take your job? Hollowing out our population base is not really a good thing. And you know, we don't want to be living in a science fiction dystopian novel of Elysium, where the 1% lives in a sky palace and everybody else is sitting around in the sewer. That's not how effective, inclusive societies work. You need a balance, and we're getting out of balance. And so that's my answer to that.
So you think that if this exodus continues, there's going to be rich, some small number of people that are super rich, and then some big number that are poor.
That are poor and are servicing them. You know, the weird thing about it is, think about it in age terms. This is kind of what I'm worried about for 40 years from now. So the people who are baby boomers are roughly 70 years old today. So let's assume the most optimistic, since I fall into that category. I have to assume
Which
the most
look
optimistic
a lot
thing.
Than
the let's hope that I live for 20 or 30 years more. And okay, so let's say we have the society where
hopefully you live for 100 years more.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I'm not sure that's going to be, you know, I have to be partially robotic to do that, which would be, and maybe we're moving toward that. But let's say we have a big die-off of the baby boom generation 25, 30 years from now, and we haven't built the next generation of prosperity. What's going to be left? We're going to be left with maybe a very egalitarian society, but a very poor society. And that's something that I'm concerned about. If we don't have that diversity of income, of demography, we're just going to stagnate. And life doesn't sit still. Other areas of the country are actively trying to build themselves up. Actually, some areas of the country are actively targeting California companies to move to their state, to move to their area. And if we lose that war, I'm concerned that we just don't have the vigor of an economy and a society to really maintain ourselves as a quality of life place.
So, Marshall, you guys actually have recognized that there is value to these advanced companies and you're tracking them. What is the value of these companies for average Californians?
First of all, the advanced industries have an advantage today in the sense that they fund above average consumption. Not rich guy consumption, but above average consumption. So restaurants, theater, things that enrich people's lives can only exist if you have people that have disposable income. Where's the disposable income? From people who work in advanced industries, because they make about four times more on average than the average worker. So in today's society, a lot of the amenities that we love about our world come because somebody subsidizes them, and that comes from that kind of upper middle class world. The second thing is, you know, we live in a world that is characterized by risk and reward. So if you can create a society where people are willing to take a risk in search of a larger than average reward, and just playing the probabilities, some of those rewards come through, that accrues to the benefit of the rest of society. So we're able to kind of get wealthier and richer, not just from a money point of view, but from a quality of life point of view, by generating success. What we need to do is we need to create an environment where there is as much opportunity as possible to succeed. We want to have equality of opportunity. Everybody should be able to take a shot. Everybody like me, a regular person who is able to start a couple of businesses and succeed, have the opportunity to achieve, the opportunity to achieve. What we don't want to do, and I think this is kind of one of the issues we have in California, is you can't guarantee the probability of an outcome. You can't guarantee that everybody that takes a risk is going to be rewarded. And in fact, if you did, you'd have a real problem. That's kind of where we're at right now. So we don't want to chase the dreamers away. We don't want to chase the risk takers away, because what we're going to be left with is just a unaffordable economic environment that is just being subsidized by either the state or mega wealthy people.
Do you think we're chasing this away? This culture. So there's a culture of innovation in California too. Do you think we're going to lose this culture and we're chasing it away?
The question there is, the question about chasing them away is an interesting one. I think there are things that we are doing to chase opportunity seekers away. One is we're over-regulating them, and we're making the cost of entry much, much higher than it should be if you want to foment a lot of interesting risk takers. So I think that from a state policy point of view, that's a problem. I also think that there's a tipping point where when you start to lose people because they don't feel that they can succeed here, or they'll be punished for succeeding, which is kind of what the tax environment is like and the housing environment is like. They're being punished for doing well because they have to pay so much more money for housing and things like that. There's a tipping point. It's a perceptual tipping point as much as it is a real tipping point, a numerical tipping point, but it's a tipping point nonetheless. My worry is that we're close to that. We're seeing that. And it's not just people in the media that are naysayers or people that are researchers that are naysayers. It's coming from the grassroots. When I talk to people and we do actual market research in the field and talk to people, there is a tremendous amount of unanimity in their opposition to what's going on out here. People are dismayed. We did a survey recently among CEOs of smaller companies who basically said, I can't move out of state, but I wish I could. Large number of people. Well, that's the kind of perceptual momentum that you want to avoid. And I see that coming to fruition in California, and it worries me.
Before we continue, we would like to thank Shen Yun for sponsoring this channel. It takes you back in time to magical world of ancient China with a unique blend of brilliant dancing, beautiful costumes, and legends coming to life. Go to shenyun.com to find out the schedule and theater information. It's a lifetime experience you don't want to miss.
Just so inspiring. It makes me want to go dance.
Breathtaking.
I was very impressed.
I'm taking my program and I'm going to mention it on the news because I think it's a great performance and people should see it.
What I loved about the show was the authenticity of it. It was taking me on a journey.
Exceptional. The technique involved, that the thousands of hours of training.
People just float.
Everything was exact, and then they worked to the exact moment, and it was beautiful.
You go away feeling with a smile in your heart from it.
Have to come. Life-changing.
Make sure you see it. Make sure you see it.
Don't wait. Don't get your tickets wait. Now.
And why do you think they're not doing anything about it? Because these are very innovative people. This is some of the most innovative people in the world, and they cannot do anything about the regulations in California?
Well, first of all, there is a huge disconnect between the business community and the government in California. And most, by the way, most research studies show that CEOs feel that way. They feel that actually they feel connected with their local governments, county and city governments, and they generally have positive things to say about them. When it comes to the state government, it's a problem. The state seems to me to be tone deaf. They just are not interested in hearing it. I think that the state views business and the economic productive sector as an enemy in some kind of a way, or as a pocket to be picked. And so I think that they're not willing to engage in the conversation. The state does have mechanisms to do this. They have Go Biz in California, which, you know, I'm sure has tried to some degree to create some engagement. But when you look at legislative policy and you look at bureaucratic policy, it's more of a contentious relationship. The business people report that they feel as though they are guilty. They're guilty before, instead of presumed innocent in any interaction with the state, that the state takes a very adversarial approach to dealing with them. And they kind of go, look, if it's a new business, I don't really have to be here to do this. I can move it to someplace else. And so I think what we're seeing them do is largely vote with their feet. If you have a business that's based in a local area and you've been there for three generations, it's very hard to move those kinds of businesses. But for a lot of other businesses that are new, I think the reaction that the business community is taking is, let's just not put it here. Let's put it someplace else.
So the question I have for you is, the state government is made up of our own people. These are not some dictators that
right.
And the business community, these innovative people that have built these companies, and some of them are really global successes, how can they not have more influence over our own people that we are electing?
That's a really good question. It's a question of the efficacy of the political system in California. We're in a de facto one-party system, so there's and the Democratic Party, which is in control in California, seems to be dominated by certain philosophies and certain geographic areas. So, for instance, the San Francisco group that is really kind of running California politics doesn't share the same philosophy, and so they're just not open to having that same thing, that same dialogue. So what's the answer? Well, competition is always the answer in these kinds of things. It would be nice if there was a robust opposition from somebody in California. It has not been able to, it's not been coalesced yet. And you have forces on both sides. It's not like the business people are not represented. They are represented in lobbying groups and trade associations and things like that. But there are forces on the other side that are promoting their agenda, like public employee unions, the teachers' unions, that have amassed tremendous amount of wealth and tremendous amount of influence and can basically fund elections to only put the candidates in that are going to align with their point of view. Until we have some ability to neutralize these influences and actually get to the notion of direct elections, where people can actually vote their will, well, we're not going to be able to solve the problem. How does that happen? Typically, things get worse before they get better, and so that's the environment that we're in.
Now, do you think essentially, you're saying the entrepreneurial spirit of California is giving up?
They're
moving out, or just kind of they're not doing much about this.
Yeah, on the margin. I don't want to say that the entrepreneurial spirit of California is dead. It's not. There's a huge movement that continues around entrepreneurship in California, which is great. But on the margin, a lot of entrepreneurs are saying, hey, I'm going to throw in the towel on California. I'm going to be just as entrepreneurial as I've ever been. But I'm just going to do it someplace else where it's easier for me. Water seeks its own level.
So, Marshall, you guys must have thought about some ideas how to fix this, because I'm sure you guys are talking about this every day and on campus in your university. What are some thoughts?
Well, first thing, I think we need to attack and address the regulatory environment. A few years ago, I think probably it's around 20 years ago, we had something called the Little Hoover Commission that Jerry Parsky was chairing, that basically went through all California regulation and tried to streamline it and recommend ways of cutting down regulation. So I think we need another one of those, I think, because it's expanded. By the way, those recommendations that Little Hoover Commission created were never implemented because they were stopped politically. So I think we need to go through and actually say, hey, these are the regulations that need to be changed. The other thing I think we need to change is we need to look at the legal system and stop allowing endless appeals and endless rounds of review, especially when it comes to things that involve capital projects that can employ people and really improve the state.
So like factories, warehouses, big
housing projects. Mostly what this comes down to, mostly CEQA, the Air Quality Act legislation. Today, you can file endless appeals to any CEQA action. So anytime there's a big proposed project anywhere, you have to develop an environmental plan. The environmental plan comes up, it's reviewed, the city council or whatever the convening authority is looks at it and says, well, you know what? You're not covering this problem off. You're not covering that problem off. Go fix it. They go fix it. They create a new version of it that everybody buys off on. First thing that happens, some environmental group says, no, I don't like it. You forgot about this. Okay, fair enough. We should be able to be open to those kinds of criticisms. You address them, you fix them, and then that should be the end of it. You've addressed the issues. But under the current system, you can keep that appeals process going constantly. So if you're a business person, you're looking for some kind of a return on investment in your lifetime, why would you invest in a project in California if you knew that it just has endless litigation and endless environmental review associated with it? That's why these capital projects are not being reviewed. So if we said one round, two rounds, and that's it, it seems to me we would be able to get investment to stay here as opposed to go someplace else. So that's another huge one. We need to look at regulation related to the workforce, to workmen's compensation, to other kinds of things that create layers and layers of compliance cost on the part of companies, and say, here are the really important ones that we need to protect workers, and here are the ones that have gotten out of control, and just go at it in a sane way where we can rationalize the system so that people don't feel like, okay, I got to get out of here. This is too much.
Now, do you think this is going to happen in California? What are your thoughts on that?
My thought is yes, actually. I think it will happen. Not out of any generosity on the part of or foresightedness on the part of our governor or the current administration, but I think that as this tipping point is hit and we start to see the acceleration of the erosion of prosperity, people are going to get upset, and they're going to start not just voting with their feet to leave, but voting to say, hey, you know what? We need new approaches to this, and force the reviews that way. We're starting to see it. We're starting to see citizen involvement in a lot of local issues. We're seeing it in education. We're seeing it in the approval of publicly funded projects where citizens are objecting on one side or the other, but at least they're getting involved. That's a good sign in my mind. The idea that we're energizing people to become part of the process gives me hope that we'll actually be able to start looking at this in a more productive and sane manner.
So you think average Californians will come out to help these entrepreneurs eventually, like by voting and by getting activated and making a change?
I'm not so sure they'll look at it as helping entrepreneurs. I think they'll probably look at it, as most people would, as helping themselves.
But because they need this entrepreneurial system.
They recognize that I'm not going to get any kind of progress in my life unless I created an environment that allows jobs to flourish and businesses to succeed. How do I do that? Well, promoting entrepreneurship and making it easier for not only for entrepreneurs to start businesses, but for business people who have already started businesses to expand them. That's where what I think is going to happen. We're already seeing actually a growth in entrepreneurship among Latinos, as an example. So if you look at the number of taco trucks and one to two person food businesses, these are actually, it's a very positive sign, because you see people who are saying, hey, I'm going to take responsibility over my life and make something happen. That's a great thing to happen. But in addition, we need to see businesses that have the ability to grow and add employees. You know, if we added one or two employees to existing businesses, we would have, there would be a lot of opportunity that would be created. We need to create that incentive for businesses to expand and grow in order to be able to solve some of these problems of keeping our own productive people here rather than moving someplace else.
Marshall Taplansky, innovation professor at Chapman University, it was great to have you on California Insider.
CMAC, this has been just a tremendous pleasure. Thank you so much. And by the way, you know, we tackle these issues quite a bit. And so our podcast, the Feudal Future podcast, is a wonderful source of information for people who want to learn more about this debate. So I encourage them to go to it. Wherever they get their podcasts, I think they'll find it interesting.
And this is a great, very informative podcast. I've been listening to it. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have an exciting news for you. At California Insider, we created a new product. It's called California Insider Opinion. This is where our insiders and experts across the state are actually telling you what's going on behind the headlines. When there's a breaking news, a big issue, important issue happening in California, they're going to come on the screen and tell you what's happening behind the scenes. And these are like 7 to 10 minutes of opinion formats where the guests are talking to the camera directly, telling you what's happening.
You're paying a tax increase of tens of thousands of dollars every year as a condition of keeping what you already own.
Make sure to look at the description below, because you want to sign up on our newsletter, because a lot of these opinions might be very sensitive that some people in the social media platform may not like. So we're putting them in the newsletter on our website so you can have them. These opinions will actually help you understand the political and policy landscape of California. We highly recommend you follow it.